John's Gospel, chapter 8. Jesus said to him, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not continue in the house forever. The son continues forever. So if the son makes you free, you will be free indeed." Independence Day holiday gives us a chance to understand the concept of freedom that transcends both life in our country, our civic life, and life in our church. It sort of bridges the separation of church and state with the notion of freedom. Freedom in a couple of different ways. Freedom certainly from things, and freedom certainly to do others. We are certainly free in the United States of America from tyranny. Let freedom ring, however, is something of a minority report worldwide. In case everybody ever asks you, in the course of playing Trivial Pursuit, how many sovereign countries are there on planet Earth? There are 195. Southern Sudan is trying to become 196. But for the moment, there are 195 sovereign countries. Amnesty International reports that in 104 of those 195 countries, significantly more than half, these are countries where victims of torture and ill treatment occur by security forces, police, and other state authorities. In over half the countries on planet Earth, government authorities institute torture and ill treatment. In 79 countries, nearly half, there are restrictions on the freedom of assembly, association, expression, the press, religion. That free expression we take for granted is not the case in almost half of the countries on planet Earth. And in 42 countries, nearly a fourth, these are countries in which people are detained without charge, without trial, sometimes indefinitely. We are fortunate and blessed to live in a place where freedom reigns. This has come at great cost. It has been now 236 years since the Revolutionary War began. And for every year since then that we have had peace, we have had a year of armed military conflict to preserve that peace. It's a one-to-one ratio. In the history of the United States, since 1775, 42 million men and women served in the armed forces. 1 million have died. There are currently 24 million living veterans, those who have placed themselves in harm's way on our behalf. We know some of you. Giles McCrary put himself between us and Adolf Hitler's tyranny in France in 1942. Denny Owen put himself between us and the tyranny of Ho Chi Minh in Vietnam in 1965. Michael Sackenheim, Megan Mill's husband, stands between us and the tyranny of the Taliban this morning in Afghanistan. The freedom from tyranny has come to us at great cost and continues to do so. As we are free from tyranny, we are also free to do exactly what this weekend gives us the chance to do, and that is to celebrate. There's really no better way to thank those who have served, those who are serving, than to celebrate the freedom they have helped to provide. The best way to celebrate is to get in touch with and stay with or spend time with people who love us, who care about us. That's why we have picnics. It's why we take the day off tomorrow. Tomorrow is one of only 5 or 6 days in the whole year where the economy comes to a halt. The New York Stock Exchange is closed. Good. Let's take a break. Let's spend time. Celebrate. And in so doing, by our expressions of joy and appreciation, honor those who have provided and continue to provide. We have freedom from tyranny and freedom to celebrate. fireworks notwithstanding, let's seize the day tomorrow. Once again. This freedom from and freedom to notion is also the case in our life of faith. Jesus says, if the Son makes you free, you are free indeed. And the nuance of how that phrase, free indeed, is translated in the New Testament speaks explicitly to freedom from sin. Freedom from sin. Sin's an elusive concept. We tend to think of it in terms of behavior, activities, the things we do, the things we fail to do, the things we can't prevent. It's something, that's a sin. They just did it. Properly understood in this context, as in the freedom from sin, sin is not a behavior, it's not an action, it's a condition. It's a condition under which we all live, and it's a condition that is in the process of becoming redirected by what God is. Sin is a condition of separation, it's a condition of estrangement. The metaphor for this is the story in the Old Testament, where Adam and Eve are the first of the people God created. God places them in the garden, they mess up, they get ejected from the garden, and they, like all the rest of us, are separated in a way that they weren't before. From the paradise God created, from the presence of God himself, and through the prophets, and ultimately through Jesus' death and resurrection, we are on the way of becoming reconciled, but we're not there yet. We still live under a condition of separation, which means we're all a whole lot more alike than different. One of the things that unites us is our togetherness in estrangement, paradoxically. One person's sinful activity is no better or worse than anybody else. And it sort of puts into perspective the things that divide us. This freedom from sin gives us the freedom to serve. Even in a church where not everyone thinks the same things, not everyone believes all of the same particulars, communities that are divided by ideologies that are political or social. Many of you have served on church boards and committees or civic organizations and so on. Those groups tend to get contentious from time to time over things that seemingly are important but seem to create a whole lot of energy drain. This freedom to serve transcends the idea that we all have to agree before we can serve together. I got an interesting phone call this week from the representative of our presbytery. I was asked, me of all people, to take a position on the presbytery's committee on preparation for ministry. I was asked to be a part of a group that essentially examines and then signs off on candidates' fitness for the ordained ministry. I'm glad that nobody has to sign off on my fitness for ordained ministry every single year. I've been doing this for about 30 years. I'm not sure at any or all those times they would have. Who am I sitting position in judgment of that in that way? I know for a fact that I am at significant odds ideologically with others that are on that committee, and I'm probably in the minority among clergy and lay leaders in the presbytery over what I think does or does not qualify or disqualify people for the ordained ministry. Nonetheless, I've been asked to serve and serve. I will, because I believe that the things that unite us as a church or even as a denomination are more important than the things that divide us. And because we have been given the freedom from sin, I will do to the extent that I'm able, and in some sense model and enjoin all the rest of you in ways that you are, to serve in spite of the things that might tend to separate us or cause us to disagree, because there's a whole lot more that unites us. We are united, among many other things, in our belief that on our worst day, we can still be resurrected and reconciled. I think that makes the next day a little bit less difficult than our worst day. It puts things into perspective. So also there's the idea that we don't get a whole lot of time to do this yet, to enjoy, to celebrate. To my knowledge, I have only met personally one person whose name wound up on the Vietnam War. This was someone who was a few years older than I was and was the son of a group of close family friends. And I remember him sort of vaguely from social cooking, which is why I'm loyal to him. And he went and served in Vietnam early in the conflict and was a medic. And the details of his story are such that he was due for an R&R in Hawaii with his fiance. And the conditions under which his unit was serving caused him to be asked, well, can you delay that R&R for just a couple of days? We think we're going to need you a little bit longer. He volunteered to delay his R&R, of course, in the intervening time, in the course of trying to save someone on the battlefield he was lost. That's a compelling and horrific story. And there are 47,000 other ones, not unlike it. And in a broader perspective, there is no reason to think that the vagaries of time and circumstance can't cause something similar to happen to any of us at any time. We run back in the house to grab something we left on the counter, and in so doing, in the course of the car trip, we miss getting T-boned at the intersection by a few seconds. Why not? You cannot predict the convergence of time and circumstance. And this, again, suggests to me that there's a level of urgency to the way we do our work, the way we love the people in our lives, the way we serve in whatever ways we are called. Freedom gives us an array of opportunities and options. It puts us in a set of circumstances that we can't fully predict. And it gives us this moment, this particular moment, to share it in the company of others, to honor the one who provided. Let freedom ring. Serve and celebrate.